Hello, you are watching Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. This is the Q&A edition. It's Wednesday, 12 noon. It's July 8th, 2026. Thanks for joining us. We do the Q&A show every Monday and Wednesday at 12 noon, the regular show, 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Thanks for following up. We were talking earlier today as Robbie gathers your questions and comments for today's show. I thought we could continue our discussion about Marine Le Pen and the political implications of, you know, exactly what it would mean if she were to win, as is currently expected, at least if the polls are right, whether she and the National Rally, her current party, the heir to the National Front, were to ascend to the French presidency. Presumably, she would also bring a bunch of parliamentarians with her as well. That's the way these things normally work. I kind of had my say right before we closed out. Do you want to take it from here?
Sure. So I think there are a few things. I think the reason that alternative for Deutschland and for National Rally, that they're gaining this level of publicity. Again, it is a mind-blowing thing for the National Rally to be in this prized position like this. But they're not like this for no reason. It's kind of like in the United States. When a center fails, the wings get the chance. And in this case, obviously in France, and you will know this better than me, they're looking at it kind of in the same way that the Brits are looking at the government in Britain. It has fundamentally failed in attending to the needs of the public and the population, in which case these outside parties that under normal circumstances would get weeded out, like with even other parties working to weed them out by horse trading and everything else, they're losing the power to do it. And they're losing the power to do it because they fundamentally failed at the most basic things of governance, ensuring the population is intact. This is true for most European cities, but as you point out, France is particular on this. If she wins, then even something like policy towards Ukraine changes. And the policy towards Ukraine has been that way for the last, since Biden? I mean, going all the way back to Obama, it was Clinton under the Obama administration that knocked over the Ukrainian government. That may change, which would be earth-shattering for Europe, especially in the context of the war, if one of the main proponents of that war, meaning countries, drops out, that's big. Same thing for Germany. That would be huge.
It would be. And also, assuming that Trump leaves office as scheduled, I think it would also make her de facto the most important national-level right-wing politician in the world, because Donald Trump would be by 2027, this election will happen in the spring. He'll be already a lame duck. I mean, the 2028 presidential campaign here in the United States will begin in earnest in September, October of next year. And so by the time she ascends to power, she doesn't even have to be relevant by sucking up to Donald Trump. She just will do her own thing, and she'll be leading the right in the West. And she'll be reaching out to people like the current prime minister of Japan and other people who are kind of like-minded. It's going to be, assuming it works out this way, fascinating. I agree totally with your statement about the failure of the center. I guess, yeah. Jamarl, what I want to ask you, and this is really, we take it for granted that the center, like here, the Democrats and the normal Republican Party in the United States do not care about normal voters. We're taking it for granted that you see a similar dynamic in places like Germany and France. Can I ask you why? How is it? They're not all dinguses at the highest levels of power. Don't they see the dangers of not trying to provide a bare modicum of improved or hope for the improvement of basic living standards in these representative democracies? Why are they not even lifting a finger to pretend? Why is there not even any play acting going on Why don't they even bother to pretend to care about us?
There's no Soviet Union. There's no alternative. Like, there's no, meaning, if you take it out of the economic context for the moment and put it into the war context, could you have conceived of a situation in, let's say, the 1970s of the U.S. firing missiles into the Soviet Union, even if it was using another country to do it? No.
No.
That was the end of the world, right?
Yeah.
They have lost their fear. Like, Europe, the U.S. has lost its fear. I don't know if the U.S. ever had it, but the fear that shit can get real. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in the sense of the public catching wildfire. I mean, look at what happened in France with the Yellow Vest movement. You had a situation where France was trying to put a fuel tax, basically an environmental tax, on the population itself that was going to raise all of the gas prices to absurd levels. In Europe, gas prices are already quite high. And the public, it was a spark. What started off as, hey, we're pissed off about fuel prices and environmental issues, turned into, we want to change the government entirely. It only takes a spark. And the more a protest, however a protest starts, the longer it goes, the more it feels itself, the demands will escalate and increase. And you saw that with the Yellow Vests, where it lasted for over a year, if not longer. And if you notice, the way the government tried to deal with it was basically giving away goodies to shut them up, basically try to take some of the steam out of the fire by saying, okay, we'll give you this, and we'll give you that, and we'll give you this, and we'll give you that, to get to the point where the public is like, okay, okay, you've made gains, calm down. I don't think they have the fear. I think they've gone for so long without either a war or some kind of economic revolution to put the fear of God in them, that they don't care. They think this is under control. The police will be there to beat the shit out of people when we need to. The military will be there to beat the shit out of the people when the police no longer do it. And we are not necessarily overly concerned about some kind of revolution or threat to the system. I think that's what it is. I don't think they're scared.
I mean, I buy all that, but I guess what I don't get is why, in order to win elections, that these like two or three, you know, whatever, the major parties wouldn't be trying to get more votes by, you know, sucking up to the electorate, you know what, you know what I mean? Like,
to the bottom, not to the top. It just is. Like, meaning, put it this way, if I have two political parties, and both political parties have come to the conclusion that the political system allows one of us to get elected either way, so why do I need to overly extend myself when both of us are effectively functioning at the lower levels of the team? Meaning, Democrats do that, believe it or not. When they say, hey, we'll give you one penny more than the Republicans, aren't we magnanimous? Aren't we least worse between the two? And they make the logical argument that they're least worse based on given 1% goodies in a way that the Republicans wouldn't. Republicans go to a different electorate, different base. They care less. I hope you get my point. Like, it's a race to the bottom, not to the top. And they've gained themselves into a political space where you as a voter flows back and forth between the two political sides. It's not like they go out.
If you're out of power, you still make money. You fundraise for being out of power. Exactly.
Yeah.
The grift.
I think it's a race to the bottom.
You know, and JT, to your point, now, historically, there is context for this. Like, before the Third Punic War started, the Carthaginians were rebuilding their power. It was really kind of just freaking out the Roman Senate.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, of course, they wanted just to go and destroy Carthage before it had a chance to reinvent itself and reinvigorate itself. The opposition to the war, I want to say it was Cicero, I could be wrong, said that would be a fatal mistake for the Roman Republic, because the whetstone of Carthage is what allows Rome to sharpen its swords.
Right.
And that's the argument that you're making about the Soviet Union, because if you are the hegemon, then pride sets in. You're the big man. There's no one who can challenge you. There's no one that can stop you. Apathy creeps in. You need that enemy. You need that peer competitor.
And you are a piece of ideas, right?
Yeah. So I think what you said is
spot on. Economically and ideologically. Yeah, like, meaning it's the economic standpoint where it's like, okay, this is the end of history. We have no competitive economic system. We won. We don't need to make sure workers are intact because they have no other alternative. They have no other option. We could go balls out. I think it's at that in the economic sense, but it's a decadence in the sense of we won. The Soviet Union fell. Russia, we're going to rape blind, even though we're going to act like, you know, we're friends and buddies and everything else. Yeltsin's going to take it in the ass. Like, I think that's what it boiled down to, that our great enemy and our great organizing principle collapse. Hence, there is nothing else. It's just us. It's decadence.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is still kind of strange, but yeah, no, I mean, there's no avoiding that. That's what's going on. So, all right.
Wait, real quick though. It's only strange if you were Ted Rall senator and you come to yourself, you think to yourself, hey man, I need to get elected. And the first thing you think of, okay, well, I can get elected by promising various goodies to the electorate to put me in office.
Right.
And then they're going to say, but I'm not going to give you money if you do that. And you're going to say, well, what do you mean? But I can get elected. I can give you other stuff. Nuh-uh. You're not going to get anything from me. In fact, I'm going to use money against you if you indeed go that route to do that. If 90% of the races are won by the side with the most cash, what's more important, giving stuff to the public or the cash itself?
Unless you go the Bernie Sanders route with a small donation model.
True. But that's outside of the brain trust. And the amount of political pressure and political heat you're going to take for that is going to be enormous, meaning you got to be a true believer to do that.
Right. That's true. All right. Well, we're here for questions and answers. So let's do some questions. Matina. So if Le Pen wins, we're going full right wing in Europe. Well, I mean.
It depends on what you mean by right wing.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, by French standards, she's as far right wing as it gets, you know, but like, yeah, at least
by American standards,
in terms of viability to be elected. Yeah, I mean, it will be extraordinary. I mean, this is her party was the National Front. This is a right wing party. Yeah, this is she had adherents who had swastika tattoos, not accidentally from getting drunk, you know. These were the real. These were skinheads. These were goons. My ex-wife and I wandered into a bar in Orléans, which is a beautiful town in central France. It's also a hotbed of the National Front / National Rally.
Is it?
And she's Asian. We walk in, and we immediately got, you know, and we're in New York. We were New Yorkers. We were like not. We didn't scare easily. She went with me to Afghanistan. We walk in there and I'm like, she's like, uh-oh, and it's all skinheads. And I'm like, yeah, we should just have one drink and leave. You know, if we leave right now, it's worse. We should just have one drink and leave, which is what we did. But it was
why is it worse if you leave immediately?
I think it's like it triggers. It's like when you're running away from an animal. It triggers the hunting instinct. They'll come after you right away. Whereas they kind of like don't
know. He's like, hey, you guys don't want a drink?
They don't know what to do, like, if you stay. And then they're kind of relieved that you've left quickly, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny.
It's like on the subway, if someone weird sits next to you, you don't want to just get up and leave because that'll, like, trigger. Where are you going? What's wrong? You know? Better to just sort of, you know, flat affect, like the time a nude guy sat next to me on the train. This was back in the 80s. It was just me. And then the nude guy gets on the train. There's like 80 seats. He sits right next to me.
His balls out?
Totally. No shoes.
Balls out. Really?
Balls out. Everything. And he was behaving exactly as a normal commuter. Like, you know, he's like this, you know, like. Yeah. I'm like, but you're not wearing clothes. And this was back when there were cops on the subway, when I guess, you know, services were expected by commuters. And this cop comes in between the cars and he's twirling his nightstick as they used to do. He almost walked right by me and him. And then he's like, stops, backs up, and he's like, hey. And the guy ignores him. And he's like, hey. The guy still ignores him. So he takes his nightstick and pokes him his knee, like, lightly. He goes, hey. And the guy goes, what? And he's like, the cop's like, forget something? And then the cop's like, okay, where are you going? And he goes, home. And he's like, "Where? What's home?" And he goes, my clothes. He's like, all right, get up. And then he like handcuffed him and took him off the train.
I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, he's still stuck on the subway. He can't go anywhere. Like, meaning he can't go anywhere until the subway stops.
True. Well, yeah. But I mean, you can't leave him on the subway, obviously. I don't begrudge. I do not begrudge the cop at all.
This is where like the cop was harassing that nude guy.
It's a job I don't want, you know. So, all right, here we go. Horses are people too. Is there going to be much of a change, though? Both Macron and Le Pen are Zionists and work for Israel. I'd have to do more research on Le Pen being a pro-Israel person. Is that true? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if her voters are going to be pro-Israel. I don't believe so.
I don't know if they're going to be Israel first. That's the rub. And the issue is, I guess for me, there are two issues in Europe. It's the war, and it's whether or not countries work within their own interests as opposed to working in the interests of Washington and Brussels, if that makes sense. Meaning, even if she is pro-Israel, does she take steps that are against French interests in order to be pro-Israel? Because there's a difference, right? Like if Donald Trump is launching a war for Israel against Iran, which I don't know if I believe, but let's say that's true. I know that's the way that it's cast.
Yeah.
Okay, that's him taking an act that is against the interests of America for the behest of another country. And I'm saying, I don't know if Le Pen goes that far with it. She seems to be ultimately a French nationalist more than anything else. I mean, but you would know this better than me.
Yeah, I mean, according to this, like, yeah, she's very, she's pro-Israel. So that's going to be difficult for her to thread that needle with her followers.
Yeah.
This is probably, it looks like it's part of the rebranding that she did to try to distance herself from her Vichyite father. Let's more comments. Okay, this one's for Robbie. Pollux, good afternoon, fellas. Question for Putinbot. Have you ever played Hell Let Loose? They just released a Vietnam version. The game is fun and strategic, and maybe explain what that is.
I haven't, and I've done a lot of I've really done a lot of thinking about this. And on Rumble, it's actually hurt because, you know, the first person shooters in the war games, they're definitely popular. I mean, it's more of a right wing platform, no, for sure. And no, dark fantasy is already a niche, and on Rumble, it's a very small one. As far as military strategy games, I really enjoy the Rome and medieval Total War games, but newer ones, though, I try to stay away from them because I think. And I've asked myself a lot of questions about this, and really the answer I keep coming back to is that they glorify war, and they try to make it into a game. Sure. And I don't know how I could look at y'all and say that I am anti-war while I play or stream a game where the entire point is to kill people who... Really, I think it's just a mind screw. Yeah, I don't know how you square that box. And short answer is no, I've never played it. And I don't know. I just don't ever see myself playing those kind of games. Like Helldivers 2 is fun. You're killing bugs and you're killing robots. Yeah, right there with it. No, Stargate. No, let's do it. Let's go kill the Gould, right? But as far as like Call of Duty and these other games that just desensitize and glorify war, and more to the point, I think you can really make the argument that they make the American people think that war is a video game and that real people are not getting butchered. And that's the problem.
And it's the science problem, right? Like a scientist who makes something doesn't, for him, it's like, well, I'm just doing science. And it's like, yeah, but the science that you just did allows them to kill X number of people. I feel the same way about the military thing. It's like the soldier is just, I'm just doing my job. Yeah, but your job is going out to kill people. You don't have the moral qualms associated with the job. It's like, well, no, dude, I'm a psychopath. That's why I got this job. No, I understand your point, Robbie.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, no, I get it. I mean, no, I run, I do a gaming channel. It's what I do. I enjoy it. I like military games. I like strategy games. Civilization, by the way, we still got to do our Civ thing. You got to teach me how to play it.
Man, I want all three of us to play that game. The game, believe it or not, the game is very,
it makes you think.
If that makes sense. I know it's complicated, or it looks complicated. But basically what it boils down to is start off as cavemen, you build out tech, and you build out culture.
Yeah.
And you make choices in the sense of diplomacy and, for that matter, growing your civilization
right.
against other civilizations that are on the board. Now, the beauty of that game is you don't have to play it through war.
Yeah, you diplomacy. Mean,
you can play it through diplomacy. You can also play it through economic victory, diplomatic victory, religious victory, yeah. War as a victory, space as a victory. So you have multiple disciplines that you can go into.
Yeah, now, I play Civ 5 all the time. It's just like that. You know, you have the cultural victory. And so, yeah, no, I get it. And listen, I get it, right? Because on one hand, it's a game. And you play it, be something that you enjoy. Sure, I get it. I understand it. But then, though, I take a step back and I look at this as an American patriot. And I see how desensitized fellow Americans are when it comes to matters of war and killing. And I just, I don't want to get in bed with those people. Maybe it's hypocritical. I don't know. That's up for you, the viewer, to decide. But for me, I don't want a part of it.
I still go to the thing, we lost our fear. I think it's fear. I think that's the issue. Like, and the reason why I say that is, when is the last time, short of 9/11, did we have our buildings attacked by missiles and rockets and shit like that? Well, we really haven't. And even on 9/11, we act like that was the worst thing in the world. When we visit that on Iran or Gaza or Lebanon or Syria or pick any rando country that you want to add to it, and we have no issue doing it. And the American public just looks at it and be like, okay, that's fine. Like, if that was happening to us, we'd have feelings about that shit. It may be internalized differently as opposed to looking at it in the way that you're saying, just as a video game. It's like, oh, we're seeing explosions happen on screen. And then we get into our game and we can do something similar. And it seems like the fact that one is human beings and the other one is a video game don't seem to mind the gap.
Well, I mean, it's just one step away, right? I mean, what's the difference between playing a modern war simulator and being a drone operator? It's the same thing.
It should be that they're human beings at the end of it.
It should be, but that's not the way it works.
Yeah.
Because we just get desensitized as a people. And I just listen, I get it. It sounds hypocritical. I understand. I get it. I can't understand. I can't even articulate it myself with my limited vocabulary. But that's just where I stand on it.
You articulated it fine. You explained it great.
Now give me a medieval style game, like a medieval Total War II. Fantastic game. If you ever played it, try it. It's awesome. The AI is retarded. Like, it is dumb. But as far as the actual gameplay goes, though, it's a great game. Highly recommend it, especially with the elements that they have with the jihad versus the crusades. Because any imam can call.
Yeah, but jihad in the game.
Oh yeah, because I mean it starts around the year 900, like in the High Middle Ages, and it just goes on.
Like la 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 la. Do they do that?
Well, a screen will pop up a little bit of the cinematic with an imam giving an impassioned speech.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, you know, it has a cinematic of the holy warriors of Islam coming out, and they go fight the infidel. And then, of course, with the crusade, it's the exact opposite. It's like, the gospel preaches peace, but also teaches there's a time for war. And you have this massive army marching in this cross foundation. So we're going to go, we're going to defend Christendom or die in the effort. So it's very accurate with how it works. But the AI, though, I say it's retarded. It's because you can beat an enemy down to where they have like two provinces left. They surrender. And then the next turn, they immediately attack you, even though they have nothing left to fight you with. So, okay, fine, you're done.
Well, on the positive, Civ's AI is actually not bad. I mean, Atomic Bomb Gandhi was always weird.
Yeah.
It's like Gandhi used to be like dropping an atomic bomb and shit like that. I forget which Civ version of that, but they were doing that. But all three of us need to play. All listen, three of us need to play. We need to get Ted to be to commit to this. Hey,
listen, I'm down. You let me know when. And I bought the game. I just got to figure out when to play. No, when you want to do it.
I'm going to be off on Thursday.
Okay, let's do it.
Ted?
All right.
You down?
Why not?
Civ 6. You have to download Civ 6. Civilization 6.
All right, you'll have to.
It's good. Oh, I promise.
Does it cost money?
Do you have the expansion? Do you have the expansions? I just have the vanilla game. Do I need to get the expansion?
Well, I have the expansion, but I don't have them on, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'll go and pick it up because that's on sale right now on Steam. So I'll do that today after the show.
Okay. Because Civ 7 is out, Civ 7 sucks.
Yeah.
Civ 6 is much better.
All right, people guys. Hate Civ 7. Moving on. All right. Okay. Darkworks 88. Explain the economic policies of the German National Socialist Party and how it differed from proposed socialist policies in America today.
Oh, so, that's complicated.
This came up because one of the tropes of the right is they always say that they try to say Nazism was a left-wing ideology, not a right-wing ideology.
Hitler said as much. It was not.
They say it all the time. It's just not true.
They're trying to conflate the two. They're trying to act like, the Nazis were just like, you know, the socialists. And they were fighting in the streets. They were literally killing each other in the streets. The policies were different.
So the word socialist is in the party name for a reason, which was socialism was really popular in Germany in the 1920s. So the Nazis were trying to attract workers to their party. So that was part of it. And there are elements, basically they bastardized socialism in their policies. They, for example, claimed to be pro-worker and they would, when they came to power, they created trade unions. But the truth is they were fake trade unions that didn't represent the workers at all and didn't negotiate for higher wages or anything. Right. It was phony. Whereas socialists actually want real strong worker protections, higher wages for socialists and for workers and so on. Socialism wants collective ownership of industry, right? They want to abolish all social classes. But Nazism was all about still private ownership of businesses, getting rid of labor unions, state-controlled monopolies. So it was basically state-directed capitalism in the sort of the way that Mussolini described it, corporatism being an alliance where big business and the state work hand in hand together. And race is super important. Racial politics and racial domination is super central to Nazism, racial superiority. Socialism is against that. Socialism is anti-racist to its core and violently opposed to that because they view racial politics as a part of class politics. That's fundamental. When the Nazis came to power, they purged all of the socialists who had joined the Nazi party. And there were some in the Night of the Long Knives, right? Just a year after they came to power. So the socialists were the famous Martin Niemöller poem, first they came for, the first entry is the socialists. They came for the communists and the socialists first because they were the biggest enemies of the state. So, what socialists want to do in this country now, basically they're liberals. They want Medicare for all. They want more affordable college. They don't even really talk much about like higher minimum wage, although they would like that. Basically it's liberalism circa 1968 is what democratic socialists like Bernie Sanders and AOC are and Mamdani are for. So I hope that clarifies things.
I agree with everything you said. Okay. I mean, one thing I would add with Mussolini, when he's talking about fascism, he's talking about like nothing. I forget the way it's said in Italian, but it's like nothing beyond the state. Like meaning even companies, corporations, all of those things are under the context of the state. It's like,
Even though they're still privately owned, but they're completely rigidly controlled for the state. And also, here's the other thing too, right? In socialism, the most important thing is the rights of the individual, right? The right of the individual to live well, to live decently, to provide for themselves and for their family, to have their work treated with dignity, to have control over their labor, to profit from their labor. Under Nazism, all individual rights are sublimated to the privileges and powers of the state, right? The state, it's all about the glory of the nation. It's sort of like Gang of Four. There's the band has a compilation where it's called the Story of the 20th Century, and it has a French franc, which is and one of them is from after World War II, and the other one's during World War II under occupation. So it's the traditional franc is liberty, equality, fraternity. Those are left wing socialist values that define the French state. But under fascism, under Vichy, they changed it to travail, famille, patrie, work, family, nation. Those are the most, not liberty, not equality, not fraternity, right? So,
who's talking about this freedom shit? Get this off the dollar bill or get this off the front.
Right. I mean, socialism is about, it's about you. Whereas ask not what you can do for your country. Ask what you can do. I'm sorry. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. That's fascist. Socialists say, ask what your country can do for you.
Right.
So
we can choose. God didn't give the Constitution, right? States organize themselves around what they need to organize themselves around, what the public chooses, if it's indeed a democracy or representative government. But again, I keep pointing out, this is a capitalist government. It's an intersection that makes it very difficult to get those values. Like when you talk, for example, when you're saying liberty, but capitalists will make the same argument, right? Well, no, we believe in liberty. We believe in freedom. This is the free, we believe in the freedom of thing. And it goes to the old axiom, freedom for who to do what. If you're in a system like this, then yeah, the more money you have, the more freer you are. But most people are not going to be billionaires. Most people are not necessarily going to be rich. So would you prefer a state that's working in accordance to the things that you require to make a life? And if indeed you have those things, is that freedom? And I would argue it is.
Yeah, I mean, the question is freedom of entrepreneurial opportunity, free of government regulation. That is a form of freedom for business, but it's not one that benefits most people because most people are not entrepreneurs. Most people are workers.
Exactly.
And what kind of freedom do you have if you can't eat, or go see the doctor? No freedom.
Can't go to the doctor, yeah.
Yeah,
and the reason I say school is, you need to be in a certain mindset to be even able to understand the context of life, right?
Totally. I agree. But I'm glad. Thank you for the question. F.U. said, thanks for the dollar. And just a reminder, we really do appreciate and require and need, well, maybe not require because we're not in a position to do that because this is not fascism, your donations. The French presidency will continue to have a first dude with Le Pen, continuity of penises.
First dude. What?
I don't know what it is. Everyone's saying that all these French ladies, right, where it's Macron's wife and now Le Pen, that they're... Look, I'm going to fess up here. I don't care for the fashion that French women have had for several decades, especially elite women. And we have it here too. Short hair, sort of the butch look.
It's a very conservative look.
It's a conservative look, and I do agree it's mannish. I personally think women look best with longer hair. And it's like, I mean, come on, Brigitte, who's better looking? Brigitte Bardot with the long hair or the pixie look? I don't know. I mean, I do know. So, but look, these are Emmanuel Macron's wife. Brigitte Macron is mean as shit, but she's a she. And she even filed suit, right, against Candace Owens.
Yeah, she did. Candace Owens. Yeah. I don't blame her for that shit. Because Candace Owens is making a buck off of calling that woman a man.
Candace Owens is going to get her ass kicked. And,
she is.
And no question about it. And then same thing with she submitted to a gynecological exam for the purpose of discovery. So
can you imagine that? Show me your vagina.
She's like, okay. she's like, want to look at my puss? You can look at it anytime you want, bitch. Yeah. And then it's like, and then what's her name? I guess the only question is it libelous to call someone the wrong sex? I'm not sure.
Yes, it is. It is. Like, meaning if you run a YouTube channel like Candace Owens and you're making money misgendering me,
but is over it and over and harmed, over. Right? Like, so the thing is, like, so let's say someone says lies about me and says, oh, on the July 8th deprogram Q&A episode, Ted Rall wore a green shirt. Okay, that's not true, but it doesn't harm me, so it's not libelous. Is it libelous to call someone a dude when they're really a chick?
I would say yes. I mean, and the only reason, because the, okay, I get your point. The question is,
does it harm? For sure.
Does it? Well, I think your point is, does it harm her by misgendering her?
Mm-hmm. I think it does. I think it does. Because she's the first lady of France. It's like, her identity. It's her job. It's her, and it goes to the dignity of her office and her president of France.
And some people were believing it. Right. Like, that makes it even worse. Like, meaning people are like, Macron is dating a man. She's a man. She has a penis and blah, blah, blah. And they're believing what Candace Owens is saying. Like, if it was a throwaway, I guess it would matter, right? If it was Ted is wearing a green shirt, Ted has on a blue shirt. Okay, so what? That doesn't really change anything. But no. You're effectively saying that she's a man, that she had a brother that died, and she took the identity of the brother. I mean, she created this elaborate lie around Macron's, life.
Well, I mean, it's no doubt it's hurtful. I mean, it'll just be interesting to see how it works its way through the courts. And in terms of Marine Le Pen is definitely a chick too. I mean,
she's obviously a woman. I don't know why people keep misgendering these French women. And it's even weirder because France usually has this allure to it. Like, the women are supposedly super sexy and the things that they do in bed.
Yeah, even the older ones, right? Like, I mean, in our country, we desexualize older women stupidly, but we do. The culture.
What do you mean, in France?
No, in the U.S.
Oh, really?
But in France, older women are still considered sexual beings.
Who do we sexualize as an older woman?
Who do I sexualize?
Well, no, you said we sexualize older women in the U.S.
No, we don't. We desexualize them.
See, I don't, though. Like, I mean, I get it. We do in the States. I don't think I do. I mean, some older women are very attractive, especially if they are powerful.
Yeah, I mean, like, for example, I don't know, if someone talked about Jill Biden boning her, having sex, a lot of people would be like, ew, she's old. But she's actually an attractive woman, It's like, whatever.
Okay.
All right, anyway.
It depends on the woman.
All right.
It depends on the woman. I think Hillary Clinton is powerful, and the power is no.
I mean, she used to be kind of cute in college, but she's not. She's not pretty,
She used to be. That's what I'm saying, right?
She's never pretty. She was cute. She was never pretty.
And she's a psychopath, which makes it sexier, weirdly enough, for some reason.
Yeah, because she's got the crazy.
She could hurt me.
She would. She would kill you, your family, everyone in your state. Just for fun, for like one increase in the polls.
Got 1 point for this.
She'd kill your cat. If you didn't have a cat, she'd buy you a cat so she could kill it. Just filming, really. Serious question. Do you care about the information that you are giving us, or do you care about us watching ads so that you get paid? I feel torn about missing the information or putting money in.
Can it be both?
Well, we care about one or the other.
So I have a solution for you. If you don't want to watch ads on YouTube, come to Rumble, because there's no ads during the live streams. I mean, I promise you.
A YouTube watcher, so good.
Yeah, point. So if you're on YouTube, you've got to remember, YouTube is a business like any other business. It's owned by Google. It is there for profit. How does YouTube make money? First, YouTube makes money off of ad revenue. They take 40% of every ad. They take it off the top. The two guys here on the screen, they get paid if you watch the ad all the way through. If you skip it, they don't get a dime. YouTube, though, always gets their cut. So that's a part of it. YouTube then
If people skip the ad, they don't get paid?
Nope. If you skip the ad, you do not get paid a crying red cent. YouTube gets
this. They force you to watch a few seconds of it either way.
Well, they do. That's how YouTube gets paid. Mm-hmm. You get paid though if you watch the ad all the way through. So if you skip an ad on your favorite creator, huh?
Nobody watches the ad all the way through. I mean, maybe I'm insane on this.
No, you're right. And the way that YouTube then tries to market this is that you can subscribe to YouTube Red, in which case you'll get ads, or that's how they do it. Okay, YouTube is not set up for the creator. YouTube is an advertiser central platform. Every platform is. Rumble is. YouTube is. They without money, they do not stay in business. Okay, if you don't want ads though, you can drop the big red box and come over to Rumble. You have no ads at all during live streams. Not one.
So answering your question, assuming the person's not going to come over to Rumble, I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, look, I want you to listen to us. I mean, we think about this. I mean, you know, obviously we would like to make money doing this, you know, because we have bills to pay.
It's our job.
I think I would still do this. If I were rich, I'd still, like Tucker Carlson is rich. He doesn't need to do it. I think I'd still do it. But yeah, if you skip, yeah, he's the Just Filming that said, this was my point. If I skip it, you get nothing. I don't know. It's up to you.
Yeah, it's a tough one. You can always get premium at premium. So I don't
come over to Rumble. Yeah.
Or come over to Rumble. Yeah.
That's probably the easiest solution, really.
And leave a comment so we can get credit.
Because I took that question differently. I didn't. When I first read it, I thought it was like a big over, you know, arching question about capitalism. Would you do this even if are you doing it only for the money, or are you, or would you know what I mean? Like, or would you do it anyway? I mean, obviously, we care about politics.
Yeah, I totally misunderstood that too. I took it as, would you prefer? And I guess I took it in a weird way. Would you prefer us giving money, or would you prefer us receiving your information? And that's why I was like, wait, we can't do both? Like, you can't, like, donate to the show? And
I keep forgetting, because, I mean, obviously we don't see the ads while we're on the air.
Exactly.
That suddenly the ad comes in while we're talking on YouTube, right? I don't even know how. Yeah, that must be incredible.
Yeah, people have bitched about that on my show all the time. They're like, that ad came in the way in the middle.
It's frustrating. Yeah, probably. Right when we're saying something interesting too.
Yeah, we have no control over it. Now if you have YouTube Red, you don't YouTube, then they have what they call profit sharing. So the creator then gets a percentage. I don't know what the percentage is of whatever the ad revenue would have been. How that works, I have no idea. YouTube is they're very closed-lipped on how that stuff works in the back end. But there is profit sharing, and there are no ads. If you want to stay on YouTube, then
YouTube Red also allows you to get, like, you know, the rental movies and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Because
and I don't get ads, but I don't get movies for free. I mean, they have some, but I think everybody gets those for free.
Yeah, I have Rumble Premium because I'm in the Rumble Creator Program, so that's a requirement to have. And to be honest with you, a lot of the people who I watch are already on Rumble anyway, so I just I'm here on Rumble like 90% of the time anyway. So I would never buy YouTube Red because for me it doesn't make any sense.
All right, here we go. Manchild, any chance Le Pen's pro-Israel positions could hurt her with the public?
That's my question.
I would say
it will.
Yeah, I mean, look, her. Here's the thing, right? So public opinion, I'm reading from The Guardian here, in France is highly polarized about Israel. 71% of French people oppose boycotting Israeli artists, and they see that as fueling anti-Semitism. But 63% of Frenchmen hold unfavorable views of Israel currently, a number that keeps increasing, and a strong majority wants sanctions against the state of Israel. So basically, I guess it's sort of very cultural. The French are a nation who value the arts. And so they're like, well, if you're an Israeli artist, it's not your fault that the government sucks. And if you're a musician, you're welcome to come perform here. But we hate your government, and we're going to impose sanctions on your government.
Yeah, but see, the government is just, I mean, this is different than the Russian thing. I mean, and they're trying to treat it differently. like for Russia, they were like, well, you can't participate in the Olympics under your flag. We don't want you in this event or that event. We don't want your singers or whatever in this particular thing. As if those individual people had something to do with the policy of the Russian government or the dishonesty associated with the way they talk about the Russian war. I mean, in this case, Israel is in like 80, 90% agreement with what the government is doing. Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough one. Because they do have a point. It's like, well, look, you don't exactly have anything to do with your government, what your government is doing, but you kind of do. I mean, most Israelis agree to the tune of like 80%.
Yeah, that's so true. And there's no opposition. So it's rough.
There's none.
I would say I'd make an exception. Like if an Israeli artist were explicitly anti-Zionist and anti-genocide and said so, I'd be like, yeah, you can come and perform, you know.
It's threading a needle.
Yeah, it is definitely threading a needle. But apparently it also has to do with age. Young people are much more opposed to, it's like here, are much more opposed to Israel. So I think, look, the truth is, yeah, it'll hurt her for sure. FUSO, thanks for the dollar. Have you tried VR games? Play Civ in VR?
No, I haven't. That should be interesting, though. I mean, I played some VR games, but I guess it wasn't really a game. When I was at the airport, when I was traveling at the various airports, that's where my site worked normally. One of the VR simulators was in the space station. And oh, it was so cool. Because it's like you're in this harness and you're like floating around the space station and you're like turning around and there's like an astronaut there. And he's like waving at you and you're like, oh my God, this is so cool. I'm watching Earth. But otherwise, no. That was my only VR experience.
Okay, noted. Manchild, thanks for the $2. With the Iranian ceasefire over, it does seem that way, where's Congress in curtailing Trump's war powers in this latest round of shitassery? Outside of Spain, where's the rest of the world in speaking out? Oil's back up. All true.
Well, Europe is never going to say anything. Europe are vassal states. Like if in Civ, they would be what it's called, suzerain or something like that. They're not going to say squat. So don't look for honesty, competence, rationality, working in countries' best interests, nationalism. Don't look for any of that in Europe. The rest of the world may be quiet because the rest of the world rarely gets involved because it's not directly pertaining to them, even though it kind of is just because it's the Strait of Hormuz is the energy sector. So effectively, you have the school bully trying to isolate the victim. But in this case, the victim hits the bully squarely in the balls. The rest of the world is not going to get involved.
No.
They're just not. Really? Like, if the rest of the world doesn't get involved in a genocide, they're not going to get involved in a war between the United States and Iran any more than they got involved with the United States attacking Maduro. If the U.S. tried to take Greenland, would they get involved? That would be interesting, which is why I'm kind of curious about whether Trump is going to do that or not. I kind of want to see him do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Okay, so Tegder, I don't care what Brigitte has between her legs. I care that she's a child predator and groomer.
Oh, who did she groom? Macron?
Emmanuel, yeah, she was his teacher.
Was she?
Oh, yeah, it's like a crazy porn movie, right? I mean, basically, it was like hot for teacher. She... I think he was like 16, if memory serves.
He's much younger than she is.
Or 15. Oh, yeah. She was his teacher. And they got busy, and it caused a huge scandal in their little town. And she had to dip. And then he caught up with her once he turned 18.
So, did he?
So,
that's wild.
Speaking, she's a groomer. It's true.
Yeah, but Macron is not damaged. Okay, let's have this conversation. What time is it?
Let's have this conversation. I've always wanted to have this conversation.
Because I'm about to say some really outlandish shit.
Me too. Go ahead. I think you and I are on the same page. Go ahead.
There is a difference between a man or a child at 16 years old hooking up with an older woman than a woman hooking up with a younger. I'm sorry. I'm saying that backwards. I'll put it this way. A man dealing with a 14-year-old girl or a 15, 16-year-old girl is different than a woman dealing with a 16-year-old man. Macron was not damaged in that. If anything, Macron was
happy.
Yes. I'm telling you from personal experience. So when I was younger, I think I was 17, when I was when I stopped doing school and I started getting homeschooled. My teacher, who they bought in, was breathtaking. She was gorgeous. And if she would have given me any potential in, I would have taken that in. I would not have been damaged by that moment. I'm just saying, right? Men are different. We're trained different. We're reared different. Like the way society deals with us is different. If my mom catches me, or let's say if my dad catches me hooking up with a girl in my room, that's my boy.
Right.
The other way around, well, that's a girl. I'm going to kill him. Right?
Right. Right.
Those are different. Give me your take on that. Maybe I'm being.
Came up. And look, I agree with you. I did not, unfortunately, get with my trig teacher, who was insanely hot. My best friend Rob did. They went on, like, there was like inexplicably there was a class. No, I'm not making this up. Spelunking trip to Mammoth Cave, and he went because he wanted to get into spelunking, and he got to spelunk, you know, like in the sleeping bag in Mammoth Cave, Kentucky, with her.
Are you serious?
He was so lucky. It was like one of the best things that happened to him. She helped educate him sexually. Plus, she was hot as shit. And she wasn't like ridiculously old. She was like 25, right? He was like, I don't know, 15. I had several friends who were 15, 16, who were like my friend, my roommate in college, who he told all these stories about. He was a caddy at the golf club. And he used to get with all these married ladies at, you know, at the club. And he was none the worse for tear, wear and tear. My other friend, he was young.
Basically, he wasn't abused.
He was 13 and the babysitter basically ordered him to, you know, basically let her have, I'm going to sit on your face, you know. He loved it. It was like the best thing that ever happened to him, right? Like, no. No,
13 is too young. 13 is
no PTSD. Like, no need to talk. They all people who'd been to see therapists never had to talk to them about it because that wasn't an issue. And so, like, it's different. I mean, totally different. And, like, the closest experience I ever had to that was when I was, like, you know, in college. I got with some much older women. And it was – but that's not the same thing because I was of legal age. But, you know, they were old enough to be my mom or even in one case old enough to be my grandmother. It was fantastic.
Really?
So good. I mean, I think it's kind of like young men are more – you know, at 18, 17, 16, 20, men are more immature than women. And they need the guidance. And, you know, and also there's – and with an older woman, there's not going to be any drama like, oh, my God, I think I'm pregnant or, you know, I think I love you. I mean, you know, there's not going to be anything like that. It's just entertainment. It's just fun. So
I dated a woman once who was older, and it was kind of like that. She had her life together, kind of. I mean, it was ish, but she was older, and it was understood. The rules were understood.
Yeah.
This is not long term. This is us having fun.
This is entertaining.
It just seen through that lens. And that's the only relationship where I've had where it ended without drama. And, exactly. And I don't mean ended without drama.
Yeah, when it ends, you're just sort of like, okay, well, you know, it's like.
It just peters off.
Very much.
But they're not remain friends after the fact.
Pedophilia is pedophilia. It doesn't matter if it's a guy doing it or if it's a woman doing it. If you are grooming a child, and a teenager is a child. I have two of them. They're dumb. They're not really developed.
18 is a teenager.
Correct. And they're still stupid.
Well, but is that pedophilia at that point, at 18?
Certainly not pedophilia at 18 by law.
Well, legally, I mean, legally they're grown. Now, you can make the argument, and this is an argument that I make, if 18 is too young to be able to go out and buy a handgun, but you're able to join the military and learn how to fly a drone, that's a contradiction that needs to be addressed because both those things cannot be true at the same time.
True.
What we're talking about here is two parts. First, the Robbie solution to pedophilia is a 9mm bullet to the back of the head.
Robbie, answer the question. Is 18 too young?
Yes, it is.
What?
Really? I don't think that you should be able to join the military until you're 21.
with
someone. No, I'm talking about sex. We're not talking about going to. We're not
talking about the military. I agree, and I agree with you about the military.
No, listen, it's all about the age of consent, right? The reason why both political parties want the age of want the 18 to be the legal age is because they want to prey on stupid, impressionable teenagers who have no life experience that they are able to dupe to drive social policy.
All true.
That is a statement of fact.
However,
now I'm going to take it a step further than that.
But our men, but our boys, but is it harmful?
Yes.
Psychologically, to say a 16-year-old boy to bone his 25-year-old insanely hot trig teacher.
Of course it is. Yes, it is. And
do you think it's as damaging as it would be if the genders were reversed?
Both of them are wrong. So again,
we're asking you something different.
No, I know. I understand that. And I'm trying to address it, but you won't let me talk.
Go ahead. Okay, go ahead.
So here's the issue. If you have an adult that has economic power that the teenager does not have, that has more life experience than that teenager has, then you have the power dynamic that teenager does not have. You are then able to shape a reality in which that teenager gets exploited one way or the other. Brigitte Macron, I think that Brigitte's name is Bob or something. I think the guy's got a schlong, but that's neither here nor there. The point is,
I was happy to spend time with that schlong.
No, the point that I'm trying to make is if there's a power dynamic, there is an emotional dynamic that's involved in there that a young person is not equipped emotionally or intellectually to be able to deal with.
Statement that I just heard from you.
No, it's a very realist statement. No, the sun will shine on a dog's butt at least once a day. It's shining on mine right now. Y'all are wrong. I'm right. And more to the point.
You haven't addressed that point at all.
I have.
No, you haven't. Is it psychologically damaged?
Yes. Yes, it is.
How?
I just told you. Because but the adult.
The power dynamic thing is bullshit to me. I don't believe in that at all. Like the whole your worker can't fuck their boss, professor can't fuck their student. There's a conflict. There's a conflict of interest, sure, because other workers are being passed over promotions for your girlfriend or your boyfriend. But that's bad. But in terms of psychological, I fucked my professor in college. Nothing. It was fun. It was great.
You're a grown man. You weren't 14 years old. That's the difference.
But at 16,
I would have loved it at 14
because you're a stupid teenager.
I don't know. Ted, I disagree with you on
that. Oh, horny! Oh my god!
Children at that point. I guess the argument is the age of consent. At which point does it become 16? Feels like you're going into adulthood as a child. And granted, it's going to be dependent upon the.
When I was a kid, you could smoke legally at 16.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? You have some countries that 16 may be the age of consent. Fight over it, fair enough, whatever. If the person, I don't think your friend was damaged by hooking up with the teacher at 16. I'll put it that way.
No.
13 is a child.
13 I don't is even, a like, child.
And when I think of the 13-year-old, especially young girls, they sell baby fat.
Men are acculturated differently.
And more to the point.
At 13?
And more to the point, from a legal standpoint, you're talking about having a two-tier justice system based on gender and genetics. If it is wrong,
I'm not making a legal argument.
If this is both things are true. If a man, if a male teacher has an affair with a teenage high school student, he will get put under the prison, and his life is destroyed.
True,
that happens. But now, if a woman. If she screws her teacher, she might get a slap on the wrist. If she screws her student, she might get a slap on the wrist. She might lose her job. She's not going to spend a day in jail.
It's been happening. There's several current cases right now going on. These ladies have been going to prison.
They've been going to prison because of that exact argument that you've been making, Robbie. That basically. Unfair and women, so they should go to prison every bit as much as men, in which case they're putting them in prison. It used to be the case where they get a slap on the wrist because people used to be adults and would come to the same conclusion that Ted and I did, that a hot teacher hooking up with a 16-year-old is not killing or damaging the male student.
Right.
But okay, that's controversial.
If it's a legal argument,
so then are you saying that women are too fragile to be able to be with an older man?
Yes.
Are you saying that women are too weak? That they're too immature. They're too they are too incompetent to be able to be with an older man, but a young man is perfectly fine. That's very masochistic.
No. You are saying that. I never use the term incompetent. No. I never said weak. I never say any of that stuff.
Correct me if I'm wrong here. You just now said that you cannot damage a teenage man or teenage boy by having sex with.
I didn't say that.
Okay.
You're adding stuff to it.
No, I'm not.
I'm very specific on what I said.
Cannot is not the same thing. I mean, absolutely. There's no doubt that a 16-year-old boy could be damaged by an
interaction. Anybody can be damaged.
But of course, anyone can be damaged by any sexual interaction.
Yeah. A 25-year-old woman can be damaged.
Just now said that it should be perfectly fine for a teenage boy to get raped by a girl.
I am not making a legal argument. I'm saying
it's perfectly fine. It's not perfectly fine. It's not. But it's like,
because that's what I'm hearing.
What we're arguing is, well, we're not saying no harm, no foul. We're just more saying not likely to be much harm. That's what we're really saying.
Yeah, Macron was not damaged. Well, he may be. I mean, she beats him, obviously.
That's the problem. Yeah.
Yeah, she's abusive. That's the issue, right?
Yeah.
Macron's wife is abusive. And it's very possible that she was abusive to him as a kid.
Right. And that's the part that like plays into your side of things, right? The manipulation, the power dynamic that she's still weighing over the president of France.
Also, she left her husband to be with him.
Right.
She's scandalous.
So, I mean,
I know. I have to admit, though, that's all hot.
Pedophiles should be executed. They should be put the hell down. If you shoot rabid dogs, you shoot pedophiles, too.
I don't know. Whenever I see those, like, these hot teachers who are, like, off to prison, I'm always like, God, what a waste. They're so cute. Like, what the fuck?
I think the same. God, what was her name? There was like two or three where I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I mean, the husbands usually forgive them.
Young.
And the
13-year-old is basically a child. Like that, the 13-year-old thing blows my mind when I see something like that. I got to be honest. I don't care if she's hot. 13 is ridiculous.
13 is too young. Yeah.
Yes. I think the age of consent honestly should be 20 before you join the military, before you can vote because you're too young and you're too dumb. I have two teenage kids. Ted, you have a kid just recently graduated from teenagery. They are stupid.
It's not about them being stupid.
It is about them being stupid. It's all about them being stupid.
People from being stupid. I mean, I
got to be honest. I would rather have a proliferation of sex than war. If I'm being honest,
you also can't. I mean, the thing is, you can't control them. I mean, you know, like sex is such an insanely powerful urge. People will blow up their entire life for it. I mean, you guys all remember being 16-year-olds. Yes. I mean, a 16-year-old guy is like, you're just going to, I mean, it's like you're going to fuck like anything that moves. I mean, you're dying.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of, women don't quite get this, but it's a lot of pent up.
Yeah, it's so funny. I had friends who were like really sexual, and they'd be like, "Oh, I think about sex all the time." I'd be like, "Really? How do you think about sex all the time?" Because I was like, the way guys think of this was a conversation we had in college, right? I think guys think about sex all the time like this: they get up in the morning and it's like, and then like they go to sleep, and in the middle of the night they're thinking about sex too, like dreaming. Like ladies who are very horny are kind of like, oh, I've got to like pay the bills, sex. And it's like, oh, and I've got to like, oh, that looks like a good movie. I think I might want to see that sex. That's not the same.
So I remember when I was in my 20s, my 30s. I was like that in my 30s. Because in my 20s, I was sick all the time. By the time I hit my 30s, were like my 20s. And now I remember that going out to clubs, it's like I remember hooking up with one woman and then trying to plan to hook up with another one later on the night. Like, I remember being in that lifestyle. I remember.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Thank God. I read about what's his name? The Guardian Angels guy, Curtis Sliwa. He was a notorious horn dog. He was always cheating on his wives. And he got married multiple times. He was always a player. And he, a few years ago, had prostate surgery, right? And he said, oh, you know, he's still married and stuff. But he's like, oh, I hardly ever think about sex anymore. And he's like, it's so great. I could really see that. It's kind of like, you know, as an older guy, I mean, I still think about it, of course, all the time, but not like before. And it's like, and it's sort of like, it's a relief. There's that quiet in your mind. It's like, you know, it's like, I can focus on a book. You know what I mean? Like, it's
virility. Like, meaning associated with a normal functioning life. Like, you know, those guys who have sex when they're like 80 something. I want to be that guy.
Oh, yeah.
I find it to be, these are elements of a life. And it's elements I don't want to lose. I don't want to lose hearing. I don't want to lose sexual function.
Yeah, I don't want to lose it. I'm not saying I want to lose it. I'm just saying I can see how it could be come off as a relief, though. Because sexuality can be a torture. It can be torturous.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I told my son, I want you to find yourself a good girl, get married early, and have a buttload of kids.
No, screw that. Fuck that.
That's the idea, JT, is you take her home and you get busy and you just start spawning children.
Yeah, yes. I don't want kids. So to quote JT, to go
to the JT vocabulary, Thomas, get married, take her home, and fuck that.
Yes. Like, fuck that. Yeah, it did the marriage thing. That didn't work.
Well, I mean,
I have a bias. I didn't realize.
Is it the institution or is it the check that you chose?
I have this weird bias of wanting freedom and security. And there's no way to mind that gap. It's almost like you're going to be miserable in either case. And so you try to balance it out. And for the marriage, for the longest time, I was trying to balance that competing interest. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. There are times where when you wanted security, this is great. There's no issue associated with it. But the freedom and the independence thing is heavy in me. I mean, it's a heavy drive. And it's a drive that makes it difficult to keep connections going for a very long time. I realized after the marriage, a lot of stuff. I learned a lot after the fact. But that drive is strong.
Yeah, marriage is hard.
It is hard.
Marriage is very hard.
Get married, you don't realize that you have to work at the marriage. At least I didn't. I just assumed we work. So we should work.
Marriage is almost impossible. This whole idea that, like, you know, it's just you and her and then maybe a kid or two, you know, and it's just the two of you. And, like, if, you know, whatever comes up, illness, you know, economic problems, whatever, you guys have to deal with in this little cocoon of high pressure cooker. I mean, I think it's different, like with the Waltons, you know, it's like multi-generational, you know, and there's wisdom to be shared. Like, oh, that happened to me when I was, you know, when I was 12, no big deal. Don't worry about it. I mean, or here's what you do. I have a special tea that you can, I mean, we don't have that, right? I mean, it's like the nuclear family is fucking bad. I mean, multi-generational living is where it's at.
Then why does Japan have such low birth rates? Because one of the things that she pointed out is that younger families have no place to go and have sex and have kids because all the grandparents piled up on top of them. You can't have both.
Yeah, that's like one extreme to, okay, in the Waltons, they live in a big sprawling house. So when John Boy gets married and fucks someone and they live in the same house, he's not waking up, you know, grandpa. But like in Japan, you're in a place, you know, you have three, four generations living in a place like this size of this studio. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, that's,
they run hotels and whatnot, but they're dates and girlfriends. I mean, yeah, I think you're right. I think part of it is an economic issue. Like, where do people get houses? Where are young kids going to live? How many kids are able to afford a house? And if you can't afford a house, are you really going to get married? Like all of the places.
Even if mom and dad, grandpa are down the street, that's still fine. That's great, you know. But the problem is when they're living on like the other side of the country.
I will tell you, when my wife and I lived, so for a while, my wife and I lived upstairs. My mom lived downstairs. So basically, think of it like you have two sections of a house. And my mom and her husband had the bottom section. My wife and I had the upstairs. the marriage went the best that it ever did.
I believe that.
I have no idea why. I mean, never, part of it.
When my kid was a newborn, my ex's mom moved in for a month, and I was like, at the end of it, I was like, I will never say anything bad about your mom the rest of my life. And I never did, because I never thought anything bad about her the rest of my life. I was like, it saved us.
It just worked. It wasn't like they were doing anything per se. My ex-wife and my mom got along extraordinarily well. My mom would come up, hang out. Again, no issue. She would play with the dogs, take the dogs out. It's like we've organized the life around it. When we went to Merlin, it went to shit. It went to shit real fast.
I mean, the multi-generational thing is the way it's meant to be.
Yeah.
That's how we evolved over the course of hundreds of thousands of years. You know?
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with
you. Sorry, Robbie.
It's fine.
Don't want to bring up that calendar thing.
No, we won't. No, we won't go there. But no, but listen, I agree with you. I mean,
now we've evolved over 6,000 years.
Well, culture, at least. And right now, I think we're just really regressing. I mean, to your point, my wife and me, we're up here in Montana and come here from Pensacola. We have no family here. Our extended family is our church. And so, you have that same kind of dynamic, right? So you have older people you're able to talk to, people who've lived this thing called life. Young people are able to get together and hang out. You have fun, go ride horses, go out, go shooting, whatever it is you want to do, go swimming. And the parents, the middle-aged people like us, are able to talk about the crap that's going on in the day and able to talk to older people. So it doesn't have to be blood relation. A lot of times, the closest family are people that you get to pick.
Yeah,
true.
And I think that just as the country becomes more secular, I think that's another part of the big problem. Like, you can still move around, but people got together at churches or whatever and just built an actual community, not based on bloodline, but just off of experience and life. That would be enough. Well, we don't do that anymore.
Nuclear family is a failed experiment. Right?
Oh, it's a poison.
It's less than 100 years old, right?
It's second only to feminism, with how destructive it is.
And it's just like it's like just basically doesn't work. I mean, and it's new. It's so new. I mean, like I remember I went on a genealogy trip with my mom to France, and we found like the mother load of all the Raul Touzet, that's her name, birth records. And like going back to 1610, and the person said, well, you know, these used to be church records. Unfortunately, there was a church fire in 1610, so everything was destroyed before 1610. But you go back, you're looking through all these index cards. It's all the same, like agriculteur de père en fils, farmer from father to son, right? Over and over and over and over for hundreds of years. The names keep changing, but it's always the same. And then suddenly World War I, and then mobility, trains, cars, people scatter. They leave the town, never to be seen again. Everything fell apart.
Yep.
Yeah.
Little village in Plumel-Gautier.
Just because something's new doesn't mean it's better.
No, certainly not.
Yeah. I mean, things always change. I mean, there's always, I'll say things always change. I mean, the question becomes, is it sustainable or is it not? Yeah. Like, meaning it's not right or wrong. It's just the only thing that matters is, does this thing organize itself in a way that is consistent and sustainable over a period of time, or does this thing fall apart?
I mean, the part for me that I don't understand, and maybe the two of you will have an answer for this. I know we're going over, but I just really want to get y'all's opinion on this. It seems like right now what the driving force is, especially among young people, and we're seeing this in East Asia, we're seeing it in Europe and here in the United States, is put off having a family, put off getting married, put off having kids, go chase the job, get the six-figure salary, and then maybe in your 40s or your 50s, you're able to, maybe you can patch together something of a life, and then you'll be dead in 30 years, and you can't take it with you in the first place. What's the point? I mean, seriously, what is the point? You can't take it with you. The only thing that we have of any kind of value at all, if you want to have any kind of a legacy or a future, has to come from the family. And if you sacrifice all of that for the name of a corporate career and a name on a door, what do you have?
There is no point to life.
No, it is still bleak.
You can choose whatever you want. If you think family is the most important, then God bless you. Family is the most important to you. If you believe that the corporate job is better, if you believe that your kid is better, if you believe that your dog is better,
if you only care about the future, then having a kid is the anchor to the future. Because you, at least if you have a heart at all, you want to leave behind a better future for your kids than one that you inherited. But if you have no future because you mortgage it to Bank of America, what do you care?
True.
What do you mean? I don't understand that question.
So
you're building a lot of assumptions into that question, which is why I don't understand the question. You're assuming that somebody would have to have kids in order to care for the future. And that's not really true.
But more often, I think that the exception probably proves the rule, right? I mean, for every Dr. Reese that we have who legitimately cares about the environment and cares about posterity, you have a lot more people who just want what I have right here, right now, for the best life for me, nuts to the future.
I know, Robbie, but we have a society that fosters that. Like, meaning, do you want to be poor? Do you want to be broke? Do you want to have ends? And I'm not even talking about being rich. I'm talking about just enough money to support yourself. Okay, then it requires certain things. It requires a certain amount of work, a certain amount of labor. Maybe you have to go to school. Maybe you have to get so-and-so before you can even take a breath to figure out, what do I want to do? How do I want to live? What do I want my life to be? Those aren't things that are just kind of God-given. And again, people choose what they want their life to be about. It doesn't have to be about family. It could be about other things. I give a shit about your kid and how that kid propagates. I don't even know your kid and I give a shit about your kid. I give a shit about how America functions and operates in the world. I wouldn't be a lefty if that wasn't true.
You would like my kid, by the way.
You can give a shit without needing this notion of child and family and et cetera, et cetera. You can just care about the human condition. I don't think that's abnormal. I think that's
But are you more likely to care if there's something tangible that you see that's directly anchored to your life that will last into the future?
Well, yeah, I do think people are going to care about specific things. So yes, I care about my kid because I have a kid. I cared about my dog because I have a dog. I care about my mom because I have a mom. There are things that anchor you to life. Agree.
Yeah. What about you, Ted? Where does communism fall on that question? Like, how important is posterity?
Well, I mean, communism is all about equality, right? So it's about de-handicapping people from inequality, and you're giving them the most opportunity they can to be their best selves as individuals. You're unshackling them from capitalism. So, yes. So basically, whatever people choose to do with their lives, with their families, without a family, whatever, it's up to them. But, you know, the word communism, you know, comes from the same root as communal or communitarian. It indicates that we're not rugged individualists. It indicates that we all rely on each other, not just as people who are related to each other, but as members of a society. We can and should be responsible for and care for our neighbors and our fellow citizens and so on. And that we owe each other something, and that also we're all better off together, not competing against each other, but working together on common needs and helping each other out as needed, right? It's to each according to his need, each according to his ability. In other words, communism acknowledges that all human beings are not equal in their abilities or their needs. Some people have big physical or other needs that other people don't have. And so, you know, in capitalism, we can say like, well, if your daughter has Down syndrome, good luck.
Thanks for you.
Hope it works out. But communism says that person has the same value as anyone else. And we care about her just as much as we care about anyone else. And we will dedicate the needed resources to help her, even though that might require more resources than might be needed for someone else.
Does communism, and the reason I'm asking this, because if you read your book, I don't remember reading it. Does communism put more emphasis on the family or only on the individual?
Well, communism doesn't really address the family. It's like basically the way that you choose to form the architecture of your family structure. It's up to you. It's up to each individual, whether they want to have close or small or big or distant or individual, you know, be individuals. That's up to you. It doesn't address that. It doesn't try to regulate that one way or the other.
Well, that's obviously not true, because China committed millions and millions of forced abortions on its people under the one-child policy.
Right, but that's not part. The one-child policy has no place in communist doctrine. I mean, China does.
Like, it was the Communist Party of China that did it.
It's a country called Communist China that did it. And a country called, first of all, it's a socialist country. It's not a communist country. It's a governed by a communist party, which means it's a party that seeks to build towards communism, but it's a never declared a communist country, according to themselves. You can look it up. And that said, a socialist country like the USSR or mainland China, the People's Republic of China, right? They do lots of things that have nothing to do with the fact that they're a communist country or a socialist country. And this would be one of them. This was about overpopulation. This is about authoritarianism is what it is. It's like we're going to control the population through this form of sort of financial eugenics. That could have just as easily happened under capitalism, under fascism, or whatever. You don't want to conflate the social policies of an authoritarian state, which, you know, are indistinguishable between, like, say, Saddam Hussein's Iraq and, you know, the Soviet Union and, Nazi Germany. They're all very different ideologies and very different economic structures, but they may all do certain things the same way because it's about control. I mean, China is not a true socialist country. It's a country that has it's an authoritarian state with with certain socialistic attributes, I would say, and a lot of capitalistic attributes.
Was it more socialist back during the days of the one-child policy or more socialist now? I would make the argument that it's more capitalist now.
It's moving more toward capitalism, but I mean, the truth is, I mean, you can't really say. I mean, once Deng Xiaoping announced that they were going to move towards capitalism in the late 1970s after the death of Chairman Mao, you know, it's off to the races for China. It became a capitalist society almost overnight.
The redneck bull.
Yeah. So, all right,
guys,
we're over. Thanks so much for the invigorating conversation.
No, for sure.
Appreciate it. We will see you guys tomorrow at the regular time, Monday through Friday. Tomorrow is at 9 a.m. Eastern time for Deprogram. We will be there. I think DMZ is being moved to Friday, so nothing to talk about there. Thanks, everyone, and we will see you tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Ciao.
Y'all have a good one. Be safe.